views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. And now, Carl and Linda Bott, this is Free Fire Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Free Fire Radio here in the studios of KCNR. 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Hey, we're celebrating over 10 years on the air. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. Today's the 23rd of March, 2020, 7:05 in the morning. The news brought to you by our friends over at Shasta Regional Medical Center. Shasta Regional Medical Center, caring, compassion, and community. Shasta Regional Medical Center. Do we have the weather?
We do. Today, well, it's currently 45 degrees. Today we have a chance of showers, a high of 66, a low of 41. Tomorrow we have showers are likely with a high of 56, a low of 37. On Wednesday we have a 60% chance of rain with a high of 58, a low of 34. And on Thursday it's going to be mostly sunny with a high of 64 and a low of 37.
Okay, hey, the weather reports are brought to us by Shasta Gas Propane. Shasta Gas Propane expanding their business as they continue to grow, and this time they've expanded into the generator market, where they'll have generators for your home when if you lose power. And you know we're going to lose power this summer if you're out in PG&E land. They have generators for your entire house. Smaller generators for your freezer and refrigerator, or maybe keep your air conditioning going. They have a full selection at Shasta Gas Propane, and they run off of propane, and they will take care of the whole installation, all of that for you. Give them a call at 365-3793. Discounts for seniors and veterans. Okay, today it's going to be a little bit different. We had a show on Thursday night with medical professionals, Dr. Orna Gill, Dr. James Taggart, several of the people from the emergency rooms at Shasta Regional Medical Center, plus a gentleman, Jared. He was also a doctor, but from more of a mathematics type of guy. Another Dr. Gill, is that correct?
Elad Gill?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he is a mathematician, but he does the computer models for this disease and other things. Is that correct?
I'm not entirely sure. I know he was on lockdown or quarantine.
He's in quarantine at that point, though.
Yeah.
Okay, as you probably have heard, that we've had our second case of the coronavirus, COVID-19, has hit a lady in her 70s, and she's currently being treated. She had traveled to an area where there was the COVID virus. And known cases of it. So again, we go back into staying at home. You know, everybody has opportunities to leave. You know, the one thing that we can do is stay at home. Jared, you know, just chomping at the bit, he stayed home all weekend and worked in the garden. I can't even begin to tell you how many weeds I pulled this weekend. We did go out for a walk, had to get out of the house. Placer, Shasta, Tehama streets, all empty, which is good. So we walked around the block a couple of times and came back. This is what we have to do. This is our sacrifice. Stay in close. There's places of business are still open. However, like Enjoy the Store is still open. The Country Kitchen is open for business for takeout. So many of these others, La Cabana across the street, so many restaurants are open for takeout. C.R. Gibbs. I can't begin to name all of them, but we're going to put links on this to our Facebook page. So now, without further waiting here, we're going to play this. We're going to play the show from Thursday night. It's a two-hour show, and we'll play it in its entirety. I'll be on Facebook if you have questions for anything like this. So you can either come to me on Facebook, or you can text me, or you can send me emails, and I'll be up and I can answer some of these questions, or I can push you in the right direction. Anyway, Dr. Orna Gill show.
Hello, Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gill on the Dr. Orna Gill Show here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM in Your Talk Radio. Today we're going to talk about COVID-19, the coronavirus, and we're going to talk about it in a very specific format where we have doctors, experts in the community and even outside the community who will give us good information, real information, and not the kind of information that we're sort of gathering from all the commercial broadcasting systems. This is actually a good time to be in broadcasting because airwaves are probably the best way to get the best information at this time. So let's go ahead and start by introducing the people that are here in the studio with me today. We have, of course, myself, Dr. Orna Gill. We have Linda Bott, the illustrious Linda Bott, radio show talk hostess extraordinaire.
Hello.
We have Jessica Canopy. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I am Jessica Canopy. I'm the emergency manager at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Good. And then we have also Dr. James Taggart. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Gill. My name is James Taggart, and I'm the Director of Emergency Services for the Emergency Department at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
And we have Casey Fatch, the CEO. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yep. Hi, Casey Fatch, Chief Executive Officer of Shasta Regional Medical Center. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure. And we have Lynanne Foster, the Director of Marketing at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. So let's start off by talking about what is the coronavirus, what is COVID-19, why did they name it COVID-19, and go from there. And I want to just get that really basic introduction started for us all before we get into all the stats and all of the advice and all of the new data. Keep in mind that this show today is being recorded on Wednesday afternoon, the 18th of March, 2020, and we have new updates every day. And these updates are going to come to you directly through KCNR. Thanks to Shasta Regional Medical Center, they're going to provide the radio station with updates every day. So this information you're hearing now is really coming to you in real time from Wednesday, 1:30. So let's get started with definitions. Who would like to talk about the definition here of COVID-19?
This is Dr. Taggart. So COVID-19 is the name of the disease that this coronavirus causes.
Okay.
It's that simple.
And it was identified in December of 2019. So it's basically December 19. So
that's correct.
Yes, good. So, and then coronaviruses usually affect animals, right? But in this case, they can be transmitted to humans. Do we know how they are transmitted to humans?
Well, there are different. I believe the MARS was transmitted from in the Middle East from donkeys. Then you have another mammal called a civet, and those can transmit coronaviruses to humans in the South Pacific, and then you also have bats.
And there was also the bird flu and that kind of thing, too. So I want to talk about the real who right now do we know about that are infected and in California, and how are we dealing with it in general?
That's an excellent question. I think first it's important to note that right now in Shasta County, we have one case that has tested positive for the coronavirus, and they have actually made a full recovery. So that's important to note. In California, according to the CDPH, the California Department of Public Health, there are 598 positive cases.
Okay. And what about deaths?
Let me see here. Thank you, Dr. Tabbitt. We have 13 documented deaths from the coronavirus in California.
Okay. And since we only have one case here, why are we? What are the best ways that we can prevent rather than react? And how do we advise our population, our community, our friends, our families, our listeners? How do we keep it away? Are we going to be able to?
That's an excellent question. You know, the coronavirus is a virus, and it's spread via respiratory droplets. So that's why the Department of Public Health has recommended this social distancing, as they call it. So social distancing simply means that we are going to stay about 5 to 6 feet away from each other, because that's how far respiratory droplets generally travel.
Okay. And what about isolation? What is the difference between isolation, quarantine, and social distancing? And why is it important?
Well, social distancing is, like Jessica stated, is avoiding large groups of people in the public. And then isolation is one step further, isolating yourself from others because you have symptoms that could be consistent with coronavirus and COVID-19.
And then quarantine is when you have been exposed to someone with known coronavirus, and that means like totally for 14 days, complete quarantine.
Or until at least you've had a negative test.
Oh, I see. So, and how many negative tests do you need to have in order to qualify as negative?
That's a good question. I believe it's 2 negative tests.
Okay.
And what is the testing procedure?
Testing procedure is a nasal and pharyngeal swab that's placed in a special medium, and they do, it's called PCR.
Mm-hmm.
Blanking on the name of PCR.
All right, that's fine, PCR.
Polychain.
Okay,
polymerase chain reaction.
Yeah,
okay.
Polymerase chain.
Okay.
Polymerase chain.
All right.
Yeah. PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction.
Okay. So it's placed in the swab is placed in a container, and okay. So I'm just because people are talking about it all the time, and the White House recently has just showed some kind of thing with plastic containers, and so we're looking at that, and it's like, oh, is it as simple as are we going to come up soon with a swab, or is it, you know, everybody's just got these big questions. What is the test, and how do we test, and the test.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's basically, like you said, the swab, that's the nasopharyngeal swab. That's where the virus lives, and that's how it kind of becomes drops into the lungs and infects your lungs. And so we want to get it at its entrance point. And I believe it takes how long to turn around, do you guys know?
24 hours.
24 hours.
Well, let's back up, because that depends on what lab you send the specimen to.
Uh-huh.
So if we're sending to private labs, it takes a little bit longer than if we're testing locally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and talk more about the COVID virus diagnosis, means of treatment, how we prevent it, and what our hospitals are doing. Stay with us.
Start your morning with Free Fire Radio and Carl and Linda Bott, 7 to 9 a.m.
And then it's us, Armstrong and Getty, from 9 to 12.
A full-service spa is our most amazing amenity at Wind River Resort and Casino. Our exceptional menu of treatments allows you to select an array of services, including massage, nail care, and lash extensions. Wind River Spa. Spend an hour or spend the day with us. Featuring farmhouse fresh products and PCA skin products, we are the only spa in Reading that has a steam and sauna for both men and women. Inquire about our monthly membership. Book your appointment at windriverspa.com. Relaxation. Wind River Spa.
Our casino relocation project will stimulate new housing and improve existing housing. Job growth from our project will provide the income necessary for families to purchase homes in the local community. developers will meet the local housing demand by increasing the supply of new homes. In fact, Palomar Homes recently announced plans for 2,000 new homes in Reading. Our project, it is part of the solution, and it will fill these new homes. Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
If you're looking for the accountability of a personal trainer, the energy and camaraderie of a group, and a budget-conscious price tag, then our team training at Adamson's Peak Performance is for you. We've got your fitness needs covered with five types of time-efficient, 30-minute team training workouts. Mix and combine these challenging strength and conditioning sessions to enhance sports performance, build muscle, burn fat, and sculpt the body you've been dreaming of. AdamsonsPeakPerformance.com or call us at 221-8006.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Welcome back, Reading. We're talking here on KCNR 96.5 FM on the Dr. Orna Gill Show. I'm Dr. Orna Gill, here hosting a very fascinating talk with some very important and expert people in our community, here serving our community, and here to talk straight talk to you about what we're doing, how we're doing it, and why we're doing it. So we found out that we only have one case here in Shasta County that is tested positive but has recovered and is now negative times two. So the question I have is we wanted to know, number two, what are the symptoms that we should look for with COVID-19? And when should we go to the ER? Please tell us a little bit about that, Dr. Tarrant.
Okay, the symptoms are going to include cough, fever, which is defined as 100 or higher, for corona specifically, and other respiratory symptoms like shortness of breath. Mm-hmm. Other symptoms that people I've noticed in the community that they're getting concerned about is that they have a runny nose or they have a cough, but they may not have a fever or they may not have the shortness of breath. And it's those patients that I would recommend you stay home, avoid the public spaces so that you don't spread whatever it is you do have. But it's when you develop a fever and the shortness of breath that you need to start to become more concerned. Now, that being said, probably most of these people do not have risk factors, that being traveled from China or Iran or Europe, or being exposed from someone that had COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So their risk, your risk for having, you know, COVID-19 because you have a runny nose and a cough is very low. At least at this point, that is still what we're seeing.
Oh, that's reassuring.
Yeah, that's good to know. Let me ask you, how do you know if you've been exposed to someone or not? My understanding is that a lot of these COVID-19 infections are undisclosed or undocumented because they haven't been tested. Up to 86% were not documented by January 23rd. After that, obviously, they were more identified. But we still have what's called, is there a tip of the iceberg effect that we're just simply not testing and not seeing it, and we will soon see it emerge?
Yes, I suspect that there are people in different communities that are having the coronavirus that have mild disease. The majority of all these people will have mild disease and will recover. So obviously, if you're not testing, you're not going to know, correct? Mm-hmm. But we have had difficulty in ramping up the availability of testing. Mm-hmm. And so at this time, we're keeping testing for those that are needing it most. Mm-hmm. Right? And those are going to be patients that either have risk factors, the symptoms, or requiring hospitalization.
So in one way, we're mitigating by really concentrating the small resources we have on the very vulnerable at-risk patients. And even if you do have the virus, but you're relatively healthy, that will allow the population in general to develop immunity. Is that something that we can assume?
Well, maybe. We don't know that yet. Okay. They're still doing studies to determine if once you have the illness, you are then immune to it. Mm-hmm. I suspect that is the case because they have found that treating patients with the COVID-19 from plasma of patients that have antibodies, okay, actually help these patients improve. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a whole nother discussion about immunity, passive immunity, active immunity.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that in a little bit. But going back to the symptoms and mild disease, the importance is trying to eliminate and slow down the spread of the virus by keeping people home.
Okay.
If you have mild symptoms or if you have no symptoms at home, social distancing is the plan to try and flatten that curve. Mm-hmm. That curve being the number of patients a day that end up acquiring COVID-19.
The areas under the curve is not going to change, though. It just means that everyone's going to get it, but they're going to get it in sequence rather than all at once.
What it does is it helps hospitals, first responders, and everyone involved to respond to the crisis so that we don't run out of resources.
Okay. And coming from a layman here in the medical field, I think that we've never really heard, as a general public, we've not lived during the term social distancing. We've not lived in a time when every event's been canceled in every theater event, the Cool April Nights, the list goes on about things that have been canceled through March and April. And so everybody's like, when are we going to get back to normal? When are we going to get back to normal? So this is a very important topic right now to be running about what you can do to help prevent it, what you do if you have signs, in which you were talking about 100 degrees, was the temperature, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and aches and pains, but if you've got sniffles, that's not enough. You need to have the fever.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And shortness of breath and cough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what are we doing from a hospital perspective to ramp up our message to patients in the community, to make sure that we have the resources to give to the community, to communicate with the community, to let everyone know how and what and where and when to do it?
Well, so we direct everybody to the county's website, the county public department of health. They've got a little COVID-19 virus looking icon on their website, and it kind of gives you the update of what's going on in Shasta County. You can also get linked to State Department, California's Department of Health Services as well. But from a hospital perspective, one of the things that we're doing is we're daily assessing our supply levels.
Hmm.
We're looking out to maybe 4 weeks to 6 weeks and assessing what our supply levels could need to look like then as well, and keeping an eye on our supply chain. Again, a lot of this, where this virus started, was in one of the main manufacturing provinces in China, where two of the major medical supply companies in the United States, a lot of gloves and gowns and caps and that type of stuff that we use for personal protective equipment in the hospital are manufactured. And those plants are starting to come back online.
Hmm.
But at this point, we're able to tap into the emergency management supplies as well. But right now at Shasta, we're doing pretty well. We certainly want to encourage people, if they have an elective surgery coming up, to let us know that they're not going to come, and so we can save those resources, because we had four people just not show up today for surgery. Mm. And, you know, that's unfortunate, and so we'd like to get that message out to where, because we do want to make sure that we have enough supplies and also save that resource for people who do need it.
I see. So when do you project to stop elective surgeries, if at all?
We don't at this point. We're looking pretty good.
Okay.
Not to say it's not going to change, but we're doing calls with our supply chain people every day.
Oh, wow.
So, and we've got also a request into Senator Dolly. We're working with him as far as being able to help us with supplies, and we're working with the county as well, because the county has a little bit of a stockpile, I believe. So, but we'll see how that works out if we need to.
Yeah.
Well, when did you start the triage?
Well, we started triaging patients. I think you mean screening, maybe?
Outside the hospital. Yeah. I mean, can you share with our listeners what that looks like and what that means?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for asking. We started triaging patients outside, screening for the COVID virus, rather. Tuesday the 6th, I want to say. And basically what that looked like is setting up a tent outside of the ER it started, and asking people what their symptoms are before they enter the hospital. Because what we want to prevent is exposure to our sick, our elderly, our vulnerable populations within the hospital, and also our staff, too, because they have to continue to come to work. So we started screening outside of the ER for those symptoms, and then a couple days later, we started screening outside of the main hospital as well.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that you have a bunch of different tents up. What are those tents for?
Again, the tents, similar to screening outside of the hospital, the point is to eliminate exposure to our vulnerable populations and our staff. So the tents are to screen and treat patients who maybe aren't critically ill, who have mild symptoms outside of the hospital.
Okay, that's very, very critical to know. And we're going to be right back after a few words from our sponsors and our commercials. But I want to come back and talk more about what, you know, who should be scared and why should we be scared? Should we even be scared? And how does that impact our treatment?
This is the Dr. Orna Gill Show.
Let's see. Coffee, got it. Radio, dialed in, check. Showtime for Armstrong and Getty.
That's right. Join us 9 to 12, KCNR Mornings.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
This is Ted Leidy with the Northern Firearms Instruction Personal Protection Tip of the Day. If you have the ability to park in a garage or carport, do it. Criminals identify dark streets and alleys to target unsuspecting victims who are distracted with loading or unloading packages or children. Another important part of your personal protection plan may be the use of a firearm. If that's the case, give us a call at NFI at 999-1822, or to find and register for one of our popular CCW or other firearm safety courses, visit us online at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Welcome back, Reading. Reading, ladies and gentlemen of Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gill and the Dr. Orna Gill Show, 96.5 FM, KCNR. We're back here with our expert panel talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and what to expect from our doctors, hospitals, ERs, and ourselves and our families and our communities, how we conduct ourselves and that kind of thing. I wanted Casey Fatch, the CEO of Shasta Medical Center, to tell us a little bit about some of the policies now in place in the hospital that prepared for in order to prevent this virus from spreading.
Sure. So what we've done is we've modified our visitors policy at this point, where a patient can have one visitor at a time, and that visitor is also screened at the door and asked for, you know, kind of, do you fit the risk profile? Have you been out of the country or even out of county? We ask most of the time, and then that kind of triggers a couple of other questions. But then what'll happen is we've also eliminated any visitation to patients that are currently under isolation. And that's an unusual measure, but these patients are specifically vulnerable to any type of infection. And so this is just a protective measure that we put in place with under the advisement of Dr. Miles, our infectious disease specialist. And then we've also closed the campus basically to the general public. We have a lot of our volunteers are all at home. Our nursing students are gone. Hmm. We have people that come and use our cafeteria frequently because it's, you know, when we're back open, you guys got to try it. It's pretty awesome. It's a hell of a salad bar.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, we've definitely taken some measures to try to, again, you know, create those groups of less than 10, because, you know, our volunteers like to congregate with each other. They're great people, but, you know, it is what it is, and we've got to keep the groups down. So, and then we also got to try to minimize the hospital's risk of that could come in from the outside. So that's and protect our patients.
Okay, very good.
And to get an idea of if you have a question for getting ready to come to the hospital, go to ShastaRegional.com, and our current visitor policy will be updated frequently.
Sounds good. That's very helpful. Thank you very much, okay. Casey.
Thank you.
When we come into the tents, we're talking back to the tents, because everyone gets freaked out on those tents. Looking at them, it looks a little scary. What happens, who goes into the tents, and why? And then when you come, and who leaves the tents? Where do they go? Do they go into isolation? Do they go home? Do they go in the hospital? How do you guys manage this?
That's an excellent question. So say you come into the hospital or you're coming into the ER for fever and cough. You would be triaged by a registered nurse and a provider outside, again, to limit the exposure within the facility. And they will perform any testing that's necessary and treat you outside as long as you have those mild symptoms, right? So your vital signs are stable. You're not requiring emergent medical care. So we'll provide you with a mask and treat you outside.
Mm-hmm. Now, once you leave that tent, how long does the tent need to be? Is the tent itself, does it have any kind of infectious surfaces on it, like on the inside? Those droplets live for 9 hours, I understand, the surface.
Yes, but that's everybody has a mask on, uh-huh. right? So the patients are having a mask on to protect them as well, and it's cleaned.
Okay, good to know. Well, these are all, like, very practical questions that we want to know in terms of how this is addressed in our community. What about the fear factor in the community? How scared should we really be for ourselves and for our loved ones? Is it overblown, you think?
Well, I think the fear has certainly assisted people in believing that social distancing is recommended and required to help slow the transmission of this virus. And those that need to be more concerned are those that are older, 60 or older, those that have lung disease, emphysema, COPD from smoking, anyone that has immune compromise, such as patients that have cancer, maybe on chemotherapy, patients with diabetes. Mm-hmm. That is a large population of people, right?
Yes.
So you want to be able to avoid acquiring this virus from someone else, and staying home and out of the public will help with that. You know, for patients that are wondering, well, when do I need to go to the ER? You know, if you're having symptoms of possible viral illness,
mm-hmm.
possibly coronavirus, cough, fever, shortness of breath, have these other medical problems,
mm-hmm.
I would come into the emergency department sooner rather than later if you feel like your symptoms are getting worse,
yeah.
Because we do need to see and treat you.
Yeah.
The issue with coronavirus, COVID-19, is that there isn't a specific treatment at this time.
Yeah.
You know, it's supportive care. It's providing respiratory support, support your breathing, support your blood pressure. And right now there's obviously a lot of research in treating, you know, COVID-19 in addition to preventing COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they found that using, I mentioned it earlier, I think the convalescent antibodies from the plasma of patients mm-hmm. that had COVID-19 and got better,
mm-hmm.
their plasma and antibodies that they produced mm-hmm. may be given to patients that have the illness, which they did. They've done for decades, years ago when, mm-hmm. when there was the measles.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, there really is no treatment at this time, but I know John Hopkins is doing research as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not research, it's a process that requires multiple disciplines such as hematology and the blood bank and mm-hmm. An infectious disease, obviously.
Lab time.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we really want to talk about this to understand why we are basically in the new going dark ages. Basically, we're going dark on in terms of, like, no more movie theaters and no more auto shows and no more hanging out and no more going over to your neighbor's house and no more, you know, doing things like that.
Yeah, it's definitely that large group of people that's putting you at risk and being in close quarters with others.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's important to also point out we learned a lot. We've been down this road before with these type of viruses. And you know, you go back to the Spanish flu in 1918 and you look what the measures that you know, different regions took. And so you take Philadelphia, which basically did nothing.
Yeah.
And you look at St. Louis, which acted as how we are. They canceled events.
Yeah.
And Philadelphia per capita had 8 times the mortality rate.
Wow.
So this is evidence-based practice. Canceling this stuff is the right thing to do. I'm not happy about it.
Nobody's happy about it, but we need to know why.
Closing restaurants down and bars down
and
events, you know, nobody likes that. But you know what?
Yeah.
It's better than the alternative. And what Dr. Tegger was talking about earlier about the graph and the number of cases at one time, you know, if we get inundated as a system with, you know, if we don't take these measures into play and we get inundated, it's too much on the system. There's too, you know, everybody talks about the not enough ventilators and all that type of stuff. You know, we have the right amount of numbers for that. So, you know, people don't have to be scared about that stuff, but we have to act responsibly.
Yeah.
And that means closing restaurants, closing gyms,
bars.
Well, yeah, even bars, unfortunately.
Keep yourself stocked.
So, you know, those measures are going to be effective, and we've already seen them be effective because it has slowed down in California.
Wow.
And so that's that one case, though, from the pandemic of 1918, is basically what this is all based on, is reducing everybody's exposure to each other.
That's good
to
understand why we're doing what we're doing. We are going to we are expecting a caller. We have a couple callers calling in. The first caller calling in is Dr. Elad Gil. He is a subject expert on the COVID-19 virus, and he holds a PhD in molecular biology, a bachelor's in applied math and molecular biology, PhDs from MIT, and he is very involved in studying this
phenomenon from a mathematical point of view. He's also sheltering at home, I believe. And I also have to disclose he's my brother, Dr. Elad Gil. Welcome to the show.
And let's go right through the break with us. So our producer's putting up 2 minutes. We're going to go, this is important. We're glad to have you on the air that we're going to be running this. So, again, welcome to the show, Dr. Orna Gil Show.
Yeah. Welcome back, Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gil on the Dr. Orna Gil Show. I introduced my brother, Elad Gil, Dr. Elad Gil. My understanding is that you combine your knowledge of molecular biology and applied math to interpret mathematical models of viral spread. I wanted to start by saying hello to you and then confirming that. Is that correct?
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me on. You know, I think in reality, I wouldn't call myself an expert on this. I think there's epidemiologists who study this all day long, but I have been following it closely, and I have worked in virology labs and sort of related areas in the past, and have been sort of keenly reading through the literature and tracking what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And what can you tell us about the models and what they predict, and how do they come about? How did we develop these models?
Sure. Epidemiologists or people who study these sorts of outbreaks have for many years developed different models of how viruses spread, and then they can mathematically predict the rate at which a virus will grow in a society unless certain countermeasures are taken. And often the key factor that they hone in on is something known as the R0 of the disease, which is really the growth factor of the disease.
Right.
And the way to think about R0 is if the R0 is 2, it means for every person who's infected, they're likely to infect 2 other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, for flu, the R0, or for a typical flu, the R0 is somewhere around 1.4 or 1.5, which means for every person who's infected, they will then go on to infect 1.5 people or so on average. The R0 for COVID-19 looks like it's closer to around 3,
wow,
which means that for every person who's infected, without social distancing or other measures, 3 other people will get infected.
So
what happens is...
Go ahead.
Oh, and usually what happens is, if you have a disease that hasn't really been seen in a population before, most people at this point have never been exposed to this type of coronavirus, or have been exposed to the flu or other things, or, the reason you vaccinate people is so that you create something known as herd immunity, which means that if lots of people take a vaccine, if I get sick and the virus tries to jump from me into you, but you've been vaccinated, it hits a dead end,
mm-hmm,
and that knocks down the R0. And so the reason we do vaccinations in society is to basically prevent these diseases from spreading, because they just can't hop to other people easily. If you're dealing with something like COVID-19, which the human population has not seen before, then it's going to spread much more easily until enough people have been infected in the past that they mount what's known as an immune response to it. Their immune system can block the disease, and then you stop getting as much spread. And so eventually, if you have enough people in a society infected, you really knock down the spread of the disease, assuming you haven't done social distancing or other things to sort of decrease spread to begin with.
That's a very interesting point. So what are your thoughts on travel bans vis-a-vis these kinds of this kind of information?
It depends on where you're traveling to and where you're traveling from. So, ironically, two of the countries that have the lowest birth rates now are Singapore and Taiwan, which saw very early outbreaks, but really got on top of them rapidly through testing to see who's infected and then asking those people to self-quarantine or isolate. And so they've tamped down the growth rates in those countries. And so to some extent, even though those were the earliest places where this broke out, at this point, they're actually now quarantining new travelers coming in because they don't want to re-spark the disease.
I see.
At this point, people are really viewing Europe as the new epicenter.
Wow.
Italy is probably, 2 weeks ahead or so of Spain and France and a few other countries where it's really starting to break out rapidly. And then in the U.S., the West Coast, in particular Seattle, Bay Area, and then New York on the East Coast are sort of the ones that seem to be having the earliest waves. really starting up for this epidemic.
And you yourself actually are in San Francisco and sheltering at home. Is that what they call it? Sheltering at
home?
Correct. Yeah.
Sheltering in place.
So sheltering in place. So what's that like? What is that like? Torture or what is it like?
Yeah. You know, so far it isn't too bad. And usually these things start off pretty loose, and then if the disease spread doesn't really slow down enough, things get to be stronger restrictions. But so far what it's meant is that they're requesting that people not go out of the house unless it's necessary in terms of travel for work or if you're going to the grocery store. They do encourage people to go on walks if you're not going in a large group. So if it's just, you know, you and your family or you and one other person, they tend to say it's okay, but they don't want you to be in groups of four or more. You know, today for the first time at the local grocery store, they actually put in place a security guard in a line because they were only letting in so many people at a time into the grocery store.
Wow.
And so it feels like restrictions are starting to get a little bit stronger. And my anticipation is that if you don't really see a change in how rapidly COVID is spreading, that the restrictions will get stronger and stronger over time.
I know that in Italy they're giving out fines for people who are outside and not, you know, without proper documentation or without proper reason to be out. So they can get more strict, and I know that in China, pretty draconian measures were taken on populations of 60 million people. And do you know anything about what they did and how they did it and how effective that was?
Yeah, my sense is it varied a lot by city in China. So in Wuhan, which was really the epicenter in China where all this started, which is actually a very large city, it's a city of about 10 million people. In central Wuhan, where I think the epidemic is really centered, is something like 6 million people. My understanding is that they had, to your point, very draconian measures where people couldn't leave the house. If you were caught with a fever, you either had to stay at home and self-isolate, or they would have you move into some of the hospitals that they built where, you know, there was all these stories and things on Twitter around how, you know, in 2 weeks or a week they built, you know, massive new hospitals. And really those were just quarantine centers where they had rows and rows of beds where they'd have people stay to prevent them from spreading the illness to others. In other cities, my sense it was much more about both people isolating at home, as well as my sense is that if you did go out, they would check your temperature repeatedly. So, you know, they would check your temperature when you left your apartment building, when you got into your building at work, when you left your building again. And my sense is they also did things like they taped out the floors of elevators to indicate, you know, only four people can stand in this elevator in a given time, and you have to be in your own square. They had tissues in elevators, so you could push the button with a tissue instead of with your fingers. So, and then I think there were some requirements around things like wearing masks if you're outside and things like that.
Interesting. So those are what we call more draconian, and I think it's because they have a centralized authoritarian government that can control the population, which is relatively homogenous. I think, I don't know, in cases where you have a heterogeneous population with different density of population, do you think that those are measures that are realistic for us to envision? Do you think those are measures that may ever come into place? Do you think they're something that we may need to brace ourselves for in San Francisco or even out here in Reading?
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to get to the point of China, in part because we are a liberal democracy, and in part, you know, in reality, if you take a giant step back, perhaps the best model for all this is South Korea. And in South Korea, what they did very early on, and I think, unfortunately, the U.S. missed an early opportunity to do this, they really focused on what's known as testing, tracing, and isolation. And so what they did there is, they tested very large numbers of people, you know, 10,000 plus people a day for COVID. And then anybody who was sick or who tested positive, whether they were sick or not, were both asked to quarantine or self-isolate, and they had, you know, strong fines for people who broke those quarantines.
Okay.
And then in parallel, they would trace who are all the people you're in contact with, and then they'd test all those people, and anybody who was positive, they would keep isolating. And so what they did is, without having to shut down all of society, but by focusing on the people who were actually sick and then tracing the contacts of those people, they were able to put a lid on the disease, even though it had been growing really fast.
So,
and to me, that feels like one of the smarter models of this, because you're not shutting down all of society and really hurting people's livelihood and ability to work. You know, you're really focusing on the people who are sick.
I see. It's a very interesting point, actually. So testing and tracing. I wanted to ask you what you know about the newest and latest developments in vaccine and treatments right now.
Yeah, so there's positive news there, although it may take some time. So on the vaccine side, this is the fastest I know of that anybody's ever gone from isolating a virus, sequencing it, and then actually putting a vaccine into people. I think it took something like 66 days from the sequencing of the virus to a vaccine, which is amazing. Usually these things take years.
Wow.
And so there's a company called Moderna, which has a very fast sort of delivery method, and they went into vaccine, their vaccine went into people earlier this week. So that's an amazing scientific accomplishment.
Where is that vaccine, what are the vaccine based? Where did they give it in the Moderna? Where is that? Where did they give the vaccine?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where the trial is being run.
Okay.
I believe it's in part in Seattle, but that could be wrong. So
okay.
I would double check that. But they're moving very fast. The bar on a vaccine is very high, of course, because, you know, for most people, for, you know, say 80% of people, COVID is basically like a bad flu, and, you know, you recover and you go on with life. For probably on the order of 10 to 15%, it's more severe and it requires some form of hospital visit or hospitalization. And then for somewhere on the order of 1 to 3% of people, it requires ICU. And, you know, in some cases, people are put on respirators for many weeks. And so the bad part of this disease is the number of severe cases versus everybody suffering from it. And so if you're putting a vaccine into what's largely a population that's going to be okay with exposure to this disease, you have to have a very high safety bar. And so right, what they're doing now is a small, what's known as phase one clinical trial to see, you know, is this safe in people and are they going to react well to it? And then if that works, then in 2 to 3 months, they'll do a much larger trial to see if it's efficacious or if it works well in people.
I see.
And then if that works, that's when they move into large-scale manufacturing. And so the very soonest I've heard people who are more expert than I talk about a vaccine being realistically available in the broader population would be sometime in 2021. And that assumes that everything goes magically perfectly. so I think we still have some time before there's a vaccine, unless something unusual happens. In terms of treatments, there's a few things that are being pursued right now. I think there's over 60 clinical trials in China going on. There's a handful getting up and running in the U.S. And there's a few things that people are excited about. And again, we'll see whether they work or not. You have to really do what's known as a blinded clinical trial to see if something's working or not. But there's a drug from a company called Gilead called Remdesivir that people are looking into. There's older drugs like chloroquine that people are exploring as a potential prophylactic or preventative. So there's a lot of research going on. There's some HIV-related drugs that are people are trying to reposition. And so I think people are trying a lot of different things. And as we get to larger and larger clinical trials for these things, we'll start to see whether they work or not. So, you know, we should expect in the next, you know, 3 to 6 months to see whether there's any good progress there. The one other thing that I think is interesting, and we'll see if it works, is a company known as Regeneron. It's a, you know, 30-year-old public biotech company that's very well regarded, is developing an antibody therapy as well. And so They have some initial antibodies that they're going to start testing soon, which is very fast as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the scientific and biotech and pharmaceutical community has actually moved incredibly fast mm-hmm. to start to develop vaccines and drugs and other things. And, you know, people always talk about how evil pharmaceutical companies are, but honestly, in this case,
yeah.
I feel like they're doing everything they can, and it's impressive to see you know, these companies mobilize to try and help us with this pretty serious global problem.
Very interesting, and a very, very interesting, brilliant perspective and excellent information, very precise and helpful. Really appreciate your input, Dr. Gill. And
thank you so much.
And I really appreciate your contribution to this very important conversation. So we are going to take a break right now. This is Dr. Orna Gill and the Dr. Orna Gill Show, KCNR. We are every woman and every man, as it were, today.
KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
Virus, and the president has ordered the Federal Emergency Management Agency to ship mobile hospital centers to those three states. New York and Washington will each receive 1,000 hospital beds, while California will get 2,000. Mr. Trump also approved requests from the governors in those states to activate National Guard units. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Senate Democrats have stalled a $2 trillion coronavirus relief package, much to the dismay of Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who says the pandemic even hit home in the upper house of Congress.
We're not immune to it in terms of the public health risk. Coronavirus has hit the Senate today as well. We have five members in self-quarantine.
McConnell hoping for another vote today on a relief plan. Financial analyst Jackson Wong says investors worldwide are anxious for Congress to do something.
The markets in Asia are all down today due to the worries about the coronavirus again. The U.S. side, Senate, are still debating the rescue package.
Just over 35,000 confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S., 473 deaths reported in this country. Pacific Gas and Electric says it will be pleading guilty to 84 counts of involuntary manslaughter. This in connection with a 2018 wildfire in Northern California, left 84 people dead and decimated three towns. Wall Street, the Dow down 505 points. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Do you currently get regular structured settlement or annuity payments from an insurance company for a personal injury, auto accident claim, wrongful death, or inheritance? If so, you don't have to wait for months or even years to get the cash you need now to cover urgent expenses like debt, tuition, medical bills, or exciting events like a new baby or down payment on a home. With over 25 years' experience, J.G. Wentworth, the country's leader in structured settlement purchasing, has helped thousands of people get the cash they need. Call today at 800-741-4888. We offer flexible options that pay you a lump sum of cash for a portion of your payments, ensuring you get the money you need now while still receiving future payments from your structured settlement or annuity. And unlike others, J.G. Wentworth is a direct funder and can streamline the process, helping you get the lump sum of cash you need faster. For your free cash now quote, call 800-741-4818. That's 800-741-4818. 800-741-4818.
Two of the world's leading equities markets switching to all electronic trading, a bid to stop the spread of the coronavirus.
Individuals working at both the New York Stock Exchange and the London Metal Exchange have tested positive for the virus, and it is a working environment that involves close contact. During the suspension, New York intends to continue one famous ritual, the opening and closing bell. Both exchanges plan to resume the system known as open outcry trading when the health situation permits. Electronic trading is extensively used already in the two markets, so the wider economic effects are likely to be minimal. The New York Stock Exchange in particular has faced some criticism for not making this move sooner.
That's the BBC's Andrew Walker. An urgent hunt for ventilators and other medical supplies underway in the U.S. and Europe as new coronavirus infections soared and political paralysis stalls efforts for a quick aid package from the U.S. Congress. News and analysis at townhall.com. Italy slowing industrial production nationwide.
The president of Italy's higher health council says with the new stringent measures, Italy has now exhausted all the possible ways it could to limit personal and professional conduct. The hardest hit region of Lombardy has banned any outdoor exercise not on personal property and set distance limits on dog walking. Now officials say the increase in both infections and deaths has just started to show the first sign of narrowing. The president urges citizens to keep up the social distancing. For most people, the coronavirus causes only mild or moderate symptoms, but for some, older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more serious illness. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Two countries, Canada and Australia, say they'll sit out the Tokyo Olympics if those games are staged this year instead of in 2021. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. And now, Carl and Linda Bott. This is Free Fire Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio here in the studios of KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. 8:05 in the morning here, excuse me, on the 23rd of March. Hey, on today's show, it's one we played Thursday night. Now, people are saying, oh, it's, you know, I just heard saw one that it's out of date. It is out of date in two cases. One, that we've had our second case of the coronavirus in Shasta County when we recorded the show, and the show was recorded because it covered so many different reasons why we're doing things and what the coronavirus does, how it can infect people, etc. So the two big changes are the shelter in place that happened Friday, and the fact we had our second coronavirus infection, I believe, was yesterday. So that person is being treated right now. The other facts that we have in here is what Shasta Regional Medical Center and other medical centers are doing to triage patients, why they're seeing them outside in tents, what the coronavirus is, the vaccines that they're working on, all from subject matter experts in there. Also, why we're sheltering in place and using, of course, as the model, the 1918-1919 Spanish flu. Can we say Spanish flu? I guess so. Spanish flu. And why it worked. Where in Philadelphia, where they did not do social distancing, their death rate was horrendous. In St. Louis, Missouri, where they did social distancing, it had a profound effect on those that are affected. What a vaccine does, what happens when, you know, what will slow down the virus, and how South Korea got their arms around it early and were able to keep their businesses going and identify people right away. So this, there is a lot of great information in the show, and I think that if you listen to it, you're going to find out things that your questions that you might have had all answered here. We'll be back live again tomorrow. But again, this was a decision that Linda and I made to play this one again because of the information that is in it. Yes. We've had our second case, and yes, there has been a shelter in place ordered by the governor. Those are the two big differences on this whole show, because mainly the show was dealing on what was being done, the vaccines that are coming out right now, why it takes so long to have a vaccine work. So we'll return to Dr. Orner Gill and her show.
Hello, Reading. This is Dr. Orna Gill and the Dr. Orna Gill Show brought to you here at KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Thank you for joining us on this very, very important part two segment of the COVID-19 pandemic discussion. We have in the studio with us in part two, we have Dr. James Taggart, the director of the emergency room services at Shasta Regional Medical Center. We have Jessica Candeby, the
The emergency manager at Shasta Regional Medical Center.
And we have, Linda Bott, the illustrious and brilliant Linda Bott.
We'll just drop a question in every now and then.
Yeah. We have myself, Dr. Orna Gillen. We also have joining us as a very special guest, Dr. Richard Martinez. He is the director of the Shasta Regional Medical Group and a primary care physician in the community. Welcome, Dr. Martinez.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have a lot of questions to ask you about your experience as a primary care physician in this community and as it relates to the COVID-19 virus in this community. Can you tell us about your experience in the outpatient as an outpatient physician working in this community?
Sure. You know, so we have a clinic and we have five providers here in the clinic. So we see a lot of patients, probably over 100 patients a day in the office. So once this virus kind of got out, we have made precautions basically to be able to screen patients for COVID-19 or coronavirus and also protect the health of our staff and our providers at the same time. So we are screening our patients, asking our patients to call in by phone if they have an acute illness. And if they fill certain criteria, then we screen them under sterile circumstances, so we wear protective personal equipment so we won't risk our health, and we'll be able to still evaluate the patients in a special room that we designated for those patients.
That's just, actually, you bring up something really interesting that I wanted to ask you about that you and I spoke briefly about, you mentioned. What is the risk of getting or contracting the virus as a healthcare provider?
Well, you know, I don't, that's hard to say because it depends on what area you're in. But if you look at the Italy data, which I just read last night, 20% of their family physicians are infected with COVID-19.
Wow. That's a large number. And then do they, those confirmed cases, they have to be then isolated out of the contact with the community?
Well, they have to be quarantined at home,
yeah.
But right now we have had no confirmed cases that we've screened for so far. We just started screening last Thursday.
Oh, okay.
So we have some that haven't come back yet, but of the ones that have come back, we've had no positives. What's interesting is that, you know, we're right in the middle of the influenza epidemic, and Dr. Taggart may have addressed it. So we're seeing a lot of influenza, which is kind of acts somewhat like the COVID-19 virus. So we want to obviously distinguish between those two because they're treated differently.
Can you have them simultaneously?
I think you can. I mean, it's such a new virus, that's a good question. I'm not an infectious disease specialist, so I can't answer that for sure. Mm-hmm. I think theoretically you could, but I think it's unlikely, but possible.
And who do you think should come in to see their doctor? And how do they, what are the specific symptoms?
Well, if a patient has a fever, a cough, and has breathing issues, you know, shortness of breath, then and wants or needs to be screened for COVID-19 or coronavirus, then they come in, and we can have the patients wait in the car in the parking lot.
Oh, wow. And so you'll come down in the to the parking lot.
Yeah, we can actually screen the patients in the car if we have to, if the room is not available, because the room's not always available.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have them wait, and then we have someone go down wearing their personal protective equipment and then come bringing them up to the room, and we screen them first for influenza.
Okay.
And if they're influenza positive, obviously, then we can put them in a regular room and treat them like we normally do. But if they're negative, then we screen them for the coronavirus, and then we transport them back to their car to be self-quarantined, if they're healthy enough to do that, until we get the results, which may take 3 or 4 days with Quest or LabCorp or local labs, commercial labs.
3 or 4 days, and that might be behind the eight ball at that point.
Well, I mean, yeah, we depends on our level of suspicion. If we really think somebody might have the disease, then we can send the testing to public health, and then that's faster.
And when do you advise your patients to go to the ER? How do you, when you see them, when do you tell them, hey, it's time to go to the emergency room?
Well, you know, we try to tell our patients, and that's kind of been the advice from, you know, the infectious disease panel, is don't send everybody to the ER, because then the ER is going to get overwhelmed. So we're trying to screen patients, our patients, for that purpose. And if somebody has evidence of pneumonia or low oxygen or they're sick and we would think they might need to be hospitalized, that's when we send them to the ER.
Mm-hmm. And what are the anxiety levels that you're seeing out there as a provider in the community? As
I mean, I think the anxiety levels in people is huge. As a provider, I think it may depend on your level of experience or your level of maturity as far as how many years you've been a doctor. But
yeah.
I mean, you're doing your job and you're trying to protect yourself. I really, you know, you really want to protect your staff. You really want to protect your front office people from being exposed to the virus. So that's why we put these practices in place. And so we're trying to be very, very careful.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What are your main concerns as a primary care provider for our community or the specific population that you see most often?
Well, we basically practice internal medicine here, even though we family practice clinic. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of internal medicine. So we have a lot of patients that are old and vulnerable to the disease. And, if the disease became widespread, a lot of these patients would not make it through the disease.
Oh, wow. That is a big concern. What are your the most important concepts that you want?
Well, I think if you look at the data, the self isolation models, the self distancing models are all look like they can be a positive way to address or limit the effects of this virus.
So
hunkering down in place, like you're saying. Not going out if you're old and vulnerable, you're immune compromised, staying home and let someone else go out to the grocery store or whatever.
Uh-huh. So we have to really come together about staying apart.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a new song.
I appreciate your time, Dr. Martinez.
Okay.
Is there anything further that you want to add? I know you're a very, very busy man, and I really
No, I think, again, it's just very important to spread the information, the correct information to the community, because there's so much out there that's not correct, and so much panic and so much stuff on social media that is not accurate. So spreading accurate information to the community is very valuable.
That's why we have you on here. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Welcome.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good. So thank you. We're talking today. We wanted to talk to Jessica. I know you're also about to leave, too, but I really wanted to hear.
She has patience waiting, but we'll grab a little bit more
of
while we're here.
Yeah, we're going to squeeze that last bit of water out of this rock, you know? So, Jessica, tell us about the community and how we're talking about community efforts, how the community coordinates, how the community contributes to their own safety, and how we all working together.
Thank you for asking. So thing to know about our county, we're very tight-knit. We're always working together, even the other hospitals in the county. So Mayor's Memorial and Mercy Medical Center and Shasta Regional, we're always working together when it comes to disaster preparedness. And this is no different. So now we've joined efforts and we're talking all the time, every day we're talking about what they're doing, what we're doing, what kind of supplies we have, what kind of supplies they have, and we're making sure that we have the resources available together to care for our community.
Mm-hmm. So, in general, what would be your main message to people who want to coordinate staying apart from one another? How do you do that, and how do we as just a community do encourage or survive that kind of
isolation?
Well, yeah, it's hard being in your house. So first, I mean, the social distancing does not necessarily mean you can't go to the grocery store, say. We still want you to go to the store when you need food or cleaning supplies, if you can find them, I guess. but the big picture is you got to stay home if you're sick, you know, and not go out and infect others. And if you need your doctor, call ahead. And if you need emergent care, the hospitals are here for you. But staying home and not making sure that we're not infecting everybody when we have minor illnesses will help. You mentioned dampening the curve. So that means that we're not going to have so many positive cases all at once, so that we're not overrunning the healthcare system. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Yes, that does. I appreciate it.
And I think on that note, we have so much more valuable information after the break. We're going to take a break here.
Yes, we are. Thank you all for joining us. And we will be right back on the Dr. Orna Gill Show. KCNR.
Get your morning update with us,
Armstrong and Getty, 9 to 12 on KCNR.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their lives. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
We all had friends and family that were affected by the car fire. Most of the cleanup is done now, and a lot of families are looking at rebuilding. If you relied on a well for your water system, it's important to assess the condition of your well and its capabilities to be able to meet the demands of new construction codes. I'm Ted Ogilvy with Diamond Core Drilling. We've been providing water well systems and pumps in Northern California since 1980. Let us help you with your rebuilding process. That's Diamond Core Drilling, 275-8162.
Real people, real winners, especially on your birthday. Watch for your free play offer in the mail. Didn't get your birthday gift? Come on in to Wind River Resort and Casino on your birthday and collect your free play. Or if you have birthday offers from other casinos, bring them in and we'll match them up for $100 in free play. And to sweeten the deal, you'll also receive triple points on your special day. Download the Wind River app. It's playtime all the time at Wind River Resort and Casino. One birthday gift or free play redeemed per year. Free slot play limited to $100.
Welcome back, Reading. We're talking here on the Dr. Orna Gill Show, KCNR 96.5 FM, your talk radio. About COVID-19, we're in the second segment of a two-part segment on the virus, giving out real information to the community, by the community, for the community, with the community, us all together. So having said that, I wanted to bring in Lynanne Foster, Director of Marketing at Shasta Regional Medical Center, and talk to us about the resources that we have, that you have at your fingertips, literally. Hopefully they're clean fingertips.
Absolutely, about the hand sanitizer.
Yeah,
well, at Shasta Regional, we are really lucky because we not only operate in collaboration with our other local medical community, Mercy Medical Center, Mayor's Memorial, and the Department of Public Health, but we are part of a prime healthcare system which has hospitals all over the nation that are experiencing different levels of what's happening in different communities with COVID. So we have up-to-date information on how those hospitals are handling it, how it's being communicated, and we are working in tandem with 49 other hospitals within our system. So that's been really helpful. In providing information.
Huge amount of coordination.
Yeah.
Who's centralizing it?
Well, we have our corporate offices are in Southern California, and the marketing people there, the communications department, is amazing, and they are working very closely with leadership at Prime Healthcare.
So where can we go for the information that Prime has organized?
Here locally, what we're doing is taking the information that we're learning not only from Prime, but again in working in collaboration locally, and turning that around into what's important for our patients and our staff and visitors that come into our hospital. And we're updating not, I can't even say daily, it's almost hourly, yeah. On our website. So ShastaRegional.com and our Facebook page, Shasta Regional's Facebook page, has the most up-to-date information in terms of what you can expect with a visit to Shasta Regional Medical Center, how we're going to be screening you before you come inside. We've now limited, as Casey mentioned, in the previous hour, one visitor per patient, just for everyone's safety. We are also recommending at this point that visitors under 14 don't come at all. Just in terms of their safety. That's not a policy that we've implemented as of yet, but it is a recommendation.
Is that because they carry the virus without having manifestations?
My understanding, it's because they could be more at risk, but I don't have the detail on that. And, again, a policy hasn't come out on that, just a recommendation to the community.
Okay. What do you say about that, Dr. Taggart? I think there was one death of a 14-year-old.
Yeah, there is one death, and it's it's uncommon. They're not at zero risk, but they're at very low, they're at the lowest risk for severe disease, and but they can have mild disease and spread it. So I think that's just part of the distancing, social distancing, and keeping people home.
Do we have any idea why it's called the COVID-19?
Yeah, because it was discovered in December 2019.
Okay.
Coronavirus.
And there's been other other coronaviruses, right?
Yeah, there's a thing. How many? 25? COVID.
Well, there are a lot of coronaviruses, but SARS, this, when we talk about SARS, that was the first SARS that was causing a lot of mortality, and now this is the SARS CoV-2. It's, we had SARS-CoV-1, and then we have, this is SARS-CoV-2. So it's the second coronavirus that has caused a pandemic.
And what does SARS stand for?
Systemic, severe acute respiratory syndrome.
Yeah, severe. Right. So so basically COVID,
SARS-CoV-1, coronavirus
SARS-CoV-1 and SARS-CoV-2. Right. And we're at SARS-CoV-2.
Correct.
Okay, so that tells you the severity of what we're really dealing with. And we appreciate all the resources that we've had in the last couple of hours contribute to a global understanding of what is going on with this virus. Because, you know, when three blind people walk up to an elephant, you know, and they each one touches a different part of the elephant, you know, they think that is what the elephant looks like. Like if you touch the trunk of the elephant, you're blind, that's what the elephant is. If you touch the side, you think that's what the elephant is. But if you go all the way around, or at least have a global view, you really understand what this elephant looks like and behaves like. And that's what we're doing here today. We're opening our eyes to this elephant in the room.
That's a great analogy.
Thank you. And so we were talking also a little bit about...
somebody's phone, whatever.
Yeah.
A message.
We were also talking a little bit. We have some ideas, something called Taggart's Takeaways.
Oh, I like it.
A bunch of ideas that Dr. Taggart.
Dr. Taggart.
A list. Basically.
Head of Emergency. What is your title again, Mr. or Dr. Taggart?
Director of Emergency Services.
Okay, Director of. Yeah. Okay. So you're. Thank you for being here because you're a busy boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've all been busy.
I know.
Well,
collectively.
This isn't anything that we haven't already discussed quite a bit of, protecting yourself by staying home, covering your cough with your elbow, wiping down surfaces with alcohol-based products. Clorox also works. You can dilute that 1 to 10, so your Clorox can go quite a long ways if you dilute it one part Clorox of 10 parts water. That'll kill the virus on surfaces. So you not only do you need to think about coughing and sneezing, and you need to think about the surfaces that may have the virus on that. And the virus, fortunately, is very sensitive to disinfectants.
Oh, that's great. Right.
So it's but it does need to be probably at least 70% alcohol.
And there's been so many different hours or days of when the droplets actually live on the surfaces.
Yeah.
Can we get close to like...
9 hours.
9 hours. Not 9 days. No. 9 hours.
9 hours. It can live on a surface for 9 hours and then it dies. Other viruses, much less time. For example, the herpes virus, I think, lives for 3 minutes, 3 minutes outside of the body. HIV, even less. So that's why you don't really get it from toilet seats. But, you know, corona, you could. Like, maybe someone sneezed on the toilet. I don't know. But you definitely want to make sure that you maintain hygiene.
Washing your hands.
Washing your hands. And also washing your throat. So very recently, a Japanese scientist came out with a study that showed that drinking fluids every 15 minutes will clear the virus, because what happens is the virus attaches to your nasopharyngeal cells in the back of your throat, and with the fluid can wash it down into your GI system, where the enzymes will definitely kill it. So that has been a very helpful tool in Japan, at least, in preventing people from getting sick, even who are exposed to this virus. Keeping the viral load low. So make sure and hydrate yourself quite often, based on that principle.
So drink that alcohol. What you're saying. Have that Chardonnay. That alcohol.
Alcohol. Yeah. The alcohol itself isn't going to help, because unless you're drinking over 100 proof. But I would not recommend that.
So I'm interested, you know, because this is the Dr. Ornegill show, and we love, you know, we're preempting some of our shows for this very important topic. And I'm curious, as a doctor and as a physician, that you never stop learning. Something new is always around the corner, a patient of opening up. So Dr. Taggart, because we know that you are limited time as well and that you have to get back to the ER. But so far, still it's like a flower that's kind of opening up or blossoming. What have you learned in so far with this COVID-19?
Well, I've learned a lot in terms of how to prevent spread. Interestingly, you know, this social distancing not only stops the spread of coronavirus, it stops the spread of other viruses, influenza, RSV, and we're seeing a lot of other viruses. When you do a full viral panel, most of these people coming in to be evaluated do not have coronavirus, but have RSV, even in adults, influenza A, influenza B, and then you also have what's called human metapneumovirus, which causes common cold. So we're seeing a lot of those other viruses if we're testing for it. So I think it's reassuring that the reason why we know the social distancing works is because we're also seeing a drop in other infectious illnesses.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, that is. Maybe we should just
that's
keep
a good tagger takeaway.
Good tagger takeaway. We are going to be right back with the Dr. Ornegill Show talking about COVID-19 on KCNR 96.5. We are every woman and every man today.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney of Shasta Gas Propane. Our company motto is, our customers are warm friends. We are demonstrating our commitment to this motto by helping those in our area that lost their homes in the car fire and are moving onto their property in an RV during the rebuilding process.
We can hook up a 120-gallon propane tank to your RV gas system and deliver gas to your property so you won't have to disconnect your 7-gallon cylinder and take it somewhere to get it filled, then reconnect it and relight your pilots. We will deliver and connect the tank at no charge, then discount the price of the propane. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793. We want to help you during this stressful time.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Welcome back, Reading. This is the Dr. Orna Gill Show. You're talking to Dr. Orna, listening to Dr. Orna Gill here on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Today we're talking about COVID-19. We're re-entering the conversation when it's been ongoing, but which today we are concentrating through our voice as a community of physicians and experts, and also bringing a couple experts from the outside, concentrating in these 2 hours to figure out how to look at this, what we're doing, why we're doing it, when we're doing it, and gaining a little control over the information so that we have the opportunity to highlight the most important ways in which we can conduct ourselves and not be so afraid. So wanted to talk a little bit about the social distancing and isolation that we have recommended by the CDC. Dr. Taggart, I wanted to ask you about people who are older and more vulnerable, seniors in their 80s, 90s. Is it recommended that they self-isolate? What are your thoughts about people who have sick people? Should they not even go outside?
I think that is very reasonable. But first off, I want to thank you, Dr. Gill, for bringing this topic up and spending a lot of time on it, because I think people are getting a lot of misinformation, whether it's social media or the typical cable news outlets. And having the knowledge and the correct information will help lessen the fears. Not to not take this any less seriously, but having that information, I think, is critical and will help people sleep a little better at night.
That's right, and sleep is actually a cofactor in immunity, so we sleep better.
We want to promote that.
Exactly.
So going back to those that are ill, I think it is reasonable, and I recommend that people stay self-isolated, whether you have cancer, diabetes, immune suppression from medications, and of course the elderly.
So practical advice is stay at home.
Stay at home.
Don't,
you know,
it's,
you can take your walk outside, but
oh,
you can do your activities, and maybe do those projects around home that you've had on that to-do list that you haven't been doing for the last 10 years.
That's right. Yeah, time to clean out that garage. I wanted to know, when you do take walks, you want to maintain social distancing. So because if someone coughs on you from 3 feet away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you want to watch out for, go ahead.
Yeah, you just want to keep your 6 feet distance from people.
Yeah. They're saying that in China now they have people in elevators. They have elevators marked with tape, so where only four mm-hmm. people can fit, and they have these little lanes set up so that people will...
They must be big elevators.
Yeah, stay, or small people. You stay in your lane, as it were, for this
literally.
Virus, literally in this situation. I want also to talk to you guys about economic factors that impact our community. A lot of people are scared about what's going on in...
That's probably where a lot of... Sorry to interrupt, but that's probably where people are even more afraid.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
The anxiety level of...
If they're not getting their paycheck to pay their rent or to buy food. And so I know our government is working hard to try and help lessen that impact, but the social distancing will help in the long run by shortening this already financial disaster. It's going to be a financial disaster either way you cut it, but the social distancing will help slow this transmission of the virus and help hospitals and healthcare systems not get overwhelmed. And if we were to not do these things, I would expect a greater economic disaster when healthcare systems get overwhelmed. And then you have a greater economic disaster. It's going to take longer to bounce back from. So I think all these things together will help us bounce back faster.
The economic impact are going to be short term, you think, then?
Well, depends what you call short term. I anticipate, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, 6 months.
Okay.
You know, 6 months until we start seeing an improvement in the economy. But, you know, are we talking about, we're talking about jobs, right, and people going back to work. And right now I think we're looking at, right now we're preparing for the community spread of coronavirus. And we have schools that are out for 2 to 3 weeks. So I think we'll know a lot more here in the next 2 to 4 weeks where we are at with this illness. And, you know, kids, that's another point. Kids are at home now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would keep your kids home. I wouldn't be sending them out, you know, to the neighbor's house who grandpa has, you know, is on oxygen for COPD. So you need to keep your kids home.
And
the best that you can. I mean, I know there are a lot of social situations out there, but just something that people need to think about.
That's important. Yeah, they can't go to the playground now. There's none of that, right?
Right. Yeah, I would not be going to the playground. Yeah. Go to the backyard.
Maybe, I guess the visual would be the backyard or you know, if you're going to take a walk or walk on the trail, trail walk, would that be...
Sure.
Permissible. Yeah, it's keep your social distance. You like not run into somebody and high five your friend down the street.
Right, exactly. Just get used to the elbow bumps. Great. And so another thing that came up that was recent, the WHO just issued a statement to stop administrating Motrin and ibuprofen for viral symptoms because that actually makes COVID-19 blow up. Well, not blow up. I mean, it flares it. Makes it much more difficult to treat and mitigate. So if you do have viral symptoms, take Tylenol.
Yes. Anti-inflammatories have been just shown to worsen the illness, and they have poorer outcomes. So no Advil, no ibuprofen, no Motrin, no naproxen.
That's right.
Use Advil instead.
That makes
the key ingredient there is ibuprofen. All those other names are either a brand name or an anti-inflammatory. Inflammatories are
valuable.
About to be avoided.
Yeah, very important. It's interesting that we have age-based recommendations, but I think the most general recommendation that we can maintain is that of the principle of social distancing, isolating people who have flu symptoms, watching the curve of infection kind of tamp down, and make sure that we alert ourselves and take responsibility, because we're not invincible. Some of us feel like we, you know, especially the young people, nothing can kill me. But in fact, the responsibility lies within all of us to get through this and then be able to congregate again eventually, hopefully very soon, sooner than later.
Do we know where the virus, we know that it originated, of course, in Wuhan, but do we know how it where did it come from?
Well, I think you know better than me. I think I heard you talk about
Dr. Taggart.
Yes, Dr. Taggart.
Well, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, but it is believed that it was contracted from an animal, and that animal potentially being a civet.
Civet.
So that's where I'm thinking it came from.
Okay.
From what I've read and the other, you know, everyone that. Conspiracy theorists think that it may have been released as a bioweapon.
Right.
I haven't seen proof of
right.
that.
Right. So you're thinking it's from an animal,
yeah.
and it jumped somehow into human.
Right.
And whatever became the virus.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's potential for these epidemics to recur, not just. You know, we have SARS-1, SARS-2. There could be a 3. So these kinds of principles. And understanding how viruses behave, how disease is transmitted, will allow us to be even better prepared in round 2,
right.
You know, round 3, round
mm-hmm.
4. Because
I think we're learning a lot from this virus.
Yeah, and from the ones that we've had in the past. So
paying attention, like you, this is why it's so vitally important with your information today, because we don't want to be Washington or we don't want to be Italy in the fact that, you know, there's because it wasn't caught in time or their social distancing wasn't happening in time or the information wasn't out there in time.
Exactly.
So it's multiplying, and that's why they're having, like you said earlier in the program, Dr. Gill, they're fining people for walking down the street without a purpose.
Okay.
I mean, that's draconian, but how else do you get it through somebody's, you know, head? No, you need to isolate.
That's right. And I wanted to mention some, I guess, maybe in closing, just talk a little bit about some good news coming out of the coronavirus. I think Dr. Taggart, you mentioned that China closed down its last coronavirus hospital, and because not enough cases to support them.
Right.
I think today they reported only 13 new viruses in all of China in one day, down from thousands.
So yeah. Here we are, almost the end of March. This began, say, early December.
Yeah.
So you're looking at 4 months.
Right.
Without the sort of healthcare system like we have. So I think we can expect to, we'll get a better idea here in the next 2 to 4 weeks where we're at.
More information coming up here on the Dr. Orna Gill Show. We're going to take a break on this segment and be right back here on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, Your Talk Radio. And boy, this is it right here. We're talking all about what's current and what's happening in the North State, your hometown, with Dr. Orna Gill.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
With the new year, it's a great time to lose 10 pounds, paint the house, and finally clean out the garage.
Honey, why don't you start by getting a car serviced at Premier Oil Change? They're super fast and convenient. You get to wait in the car with free Wi-Fi and a free beverage. Plus, they have a rewards program where we can earn points that we can put towards free oil changes and services. You don't even have to make an appointment.
Wow, honey, that sounds a lot better than cleaning out the garage.
At Premier Oil Change, we strive for convenience. Our comprehensive 30-point certified service will ensure you with
the peace of mind that your vehicle is in top operating condition. Add to that, free fluid top-offs. Now that is service, and we're quick. Easy in, easy out. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com. Visit us on Facebook or Instagram. Premier Oil is located in the Holiday Shopping Center in Palo Cedro or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park. Both locations, you get a free car wash. Visit us today. Home with a friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Alan Gordon here, Coach Master Collision. In our 50 years in business, we've met many interesting people. One customer complained the car pulled hard to the right. When I inspected the car, I noticed a small bag of rocks tied to the left side of her steering wheel. The customer stated that on long trips, the rocks would counteract the pull. Problem solved. Only temporarily, though. The pull was easily repaired with suspension adjustments and a wheel alignment. Despite being told by another shop, the vehicle had major frame problems. Having confidence and trust in the professionalism of who is repairing your vehicle is sometimes the greatest struggle. When this customer has a problem with her car, she calls Coachmaster. If the issue isn't our specialty, I'm glad to recommend the best qualified company. After all, this is my customer. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Welcome back, Reading. This is Dr. Ornegill and Dr. Ornegill's show. We're talking today about the COVID-19 virus, and we are empowering ourselves with knowledge with local experts as well as remote experts to inform ourselves and gain some control over this chaotic news cycle that has been just raining down on us. And we have the very articulate and well-spoken Dr. Tedert here today. He's going to tell us a little bit more about the definitions of isolation versus social distancing versus quarantine, and again what that means in terms of when to come into the ER. You want to take that?
Sure, thank you.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to walk away. The take home here is I don't want people to walk away thinking that if they are ill, that they need to isolate themselves at home and not seek care, whether it's a call to your primary care doctor or whether it's a trip to the emergency department. And that is, we are prepared to screen and protect everyone that walks into our hospital and our emergency department and still treat those that have, the heart attack or having symptoms of a stroke or other medical problems. And so I don't want us to forget about those symptoms and times that you should be seeking care.
Yeah, that's so important. Hospitals are safe. A lot of people say, that's the last place you want to be is a hospital.
But we're tight.
We are tight.
Yep. Yeah. And then the social distancing is preventing the large congregation of people and staying home. And then the isolation that we talked about before the break was those that have comorbid diseases and are at higher risk of death if they were to develop coronavirus. Isolating meaning you isolate yourself from all others at home. And then the quarantine is really those that have been tested positive for coronavirus
or have been exposed.
Or have been exposed and is a person under investigation.
Yes,
correct.
Under investigation sounds so, but it is very serious. We saw that because we follow stars, but Tom and Rita Hanks, they're in Australia in a film. They were tested positive, so for 14 days they self-quarantined.
Yes, that's right. So we want to make sure that we also continue to look at the positive things that are being developed right now with regard to the coronavirus. There has been reports that doctors in India have been successful in treating the coronavirus with a combination of drugs. Those drugs are lopinavir, ritonavir, a lot of antiviral drugs. So there's with chlorphenamine. I think you were mentioning that earlier, right, Dr. Taggart, that there are some new sort of cocktails out there that have been drug cocktails that have been very effective in treating the virus.
Yes, that is correct. They're looking at the one that Dr. Gill spoke about earlier with the remdesivir is an experimental drug, and they're currently looking at they have case reports where patients have improved with the treatment of this medication, but right now they need to determine if it's actually the medication that they gave, and so they're doing trials right now on that medication. So that is very promising.
Yeah, that's amazing. That
was a medication that was researched during the Ebola virus and then did not have the outcomes expected, didn't have as good outcomes as the other antivirals. So this is a medication that is available.
Wow.
We just need to make sure that it's safe and effective.
So that's another piece of good information. There's researchers in the Erasmus Medical Center claim to have found an antibody against the coronavirus. And the 103-year-old Chinese grandmother had made a full recovery from COVID-19 just recently after being treated for 6 days with these different kinds of approaches. Apple reopened all of its stores in China. All 43 stores have been reopened. And South Korea, the number of new cases is declining. Scientists in Israel right now likely to announce the development of a new vaccine, a coronavirus vaccine, very soon, they say. Three Maryland corona patients fully recovered are able to return to everyday life. San Diego biotech company is developing COVID-19 vaccine. I think
good.
We talk about
good,
that
good.
In collaboration.
See, what I like how you're tying this up is that, you know, the sky is not falling. We're doing precautionary practicing the social distancing, and there's a reason for that, which, you know, you've heard numerous times throughout the programming here in the last 2 hours on the Dr. Orna Gill show, and the fact that around the world, this is affecting the world, so around the world, there's wonderful research going on, so you have to be thinking in a positive note that we're going to find the antibody, we're going to find the, you know, like the Maryland and the 103-year-old Chinese woman, so be focusing on that as you're listening to this program about we're going to come together and as a world unit here and figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's very important to get the good news out as well, because we're listening to death rates and, you know, infection rates and, you know,
stock market plunging.
Yeah,
that
but,
kind of
you
thing.
Know, seven,
get to you.
That's right. Seven patients who were treated at the Safdarjung Hospital in New Delhi recently with that cocktail combo have recovered completely. And as you were saying, Dr. Taggart, the plasma from newly recovered patients from COVID-19
I think
now being
that is very, it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working quickly on that, especially at Johns Hopkins and other universities.
Yeah. So it's not all bad news. I just think we need to care for each other, stay focused, and stay focused on the safety of those that are most vulnerable, and do it all together. So that's the main message of the show, and that COVID-19 is not as mysterious as we all thought after these last 2 hours. This is an elephant we can see, and something we can start to take action against, because there's nothing worse than doing something without knowing why you're doing it. So that's one of the main reasons we're
thank
here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you very much, Linda, for helping to make it all come together and for guiding us through this very complicated group of people, making it all come together.
We value all of your expertises, and so we thank you again for being here. And this is the Dr. Orna Gill Show. Thanks for being here on KCNR. Do you have any closing thoughts?
My closing thoughts are, you know, we are stronger, not together, but separate. And we will get through this. I think the best thing to do is keep up to date. We will be updating you on KCNR every day from Shasta Regional Medical Center. We will give bulletins and updates every morning on the developments in the virus, both good and bad. And so everyone will have the information. Now you have the basis. Now we have a platform on which to stand and see the horizon. So that's really where we are right now. Not to worry about it. We really want to know that we have the information available, and that we have the medical professionals and the safety measures in place, so that this is not the plague. This is just an elephant that we can take care of. All right. Thank you very much for joining me. This is Dr. Orna Gill and the Dr. Orna Gill Show, COVID-19 special two-part edition discussion with great leaders in our community and great minds in the presence. I am in the presence of greatness today. So many thanks to our listeners for listening, and many thanks to all of our members of the panel today. And keep listening to us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio.